Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Revolutionary Spring, Europe, A Flame and the Fight for a New World, 1848-1849 by Christopher Clark, is a panoramic history of the upheavals that swept across Europe in the late 1840s. Rather than treating the revolutions as isolated national episodes, Clark follows their rapid spread through cities, courts, parliaments, and streets, showing how news, fears, and hopes moved across borders. He explores why demands for constitutional government, civil liberties, national self-determination, and social reform surged almost simultaneously, and why many of these movements fractured or were defeated within a short span. The book also places politics alongside material pressures such as economic dislocation, food insecurity, and the stresses of early industrial society. Clark, known for wide archival range and narrative clarity, emphasizes contingency and choice. The revolutions were neither inevitable nor simply doomed. The result is a richly connected account of a pivotal moment when Europeans argued, fought, and negotiated over what modern freedom and modern states should become. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, a contagion of revolt across borders. A central theme is how quickly the revolutionary wave traveled and why it took hold in so many different places at once. Clark treats 1848 less as a chain of disconnected national stories and more as an interlinked European event driven by shared anxieties and a fast-moving political information network. Political clubs, newspapers, pamphlets, and rumor created a sense that old regimes were vulnerable, while exiles and itinerant activists carried tactics and slogans from one capital to another. Yet the book also shows that the spread of revolt did not produce a single unified program. Each region translated broad ideals into local priorities shaped by its own institutions and conflicts. In some places, the focal point was constitutionalism and parliamentary power. In others, it was national sovereignty, religious tensions, or struggles over land and labor. Clark highlights how the same event, such as a demonstration or a royal concession, could be read as inspiration abroad and as a warning by rulers. The revolutions gained momentum from imitation, but they also generated an international counter-reaction as monarchies learned from one another and coordinated their defenses. Secondly, the social and economic pressures. Behind the politics, Clark pays close attention to the background conditions that made political systems brittle. The late 1840s were marked by hardship that sharpened grievances and widened the audience for radical change. Economic downturns, disruption in crafts and urban employment, and acute pressures on food supply helped turn ideological debates into mass politics. The book links these stresses to the volatility of street life, where hunger and insecurity made crowds receptive to leaders who promised immediate relief as well as long-term reform. At the same time, Clark avoids reducing revolution to economic determinism. Material hardship created openings, but the form of protest depended on political culture and the credibility of existing authorities. Urban workers, artisans, students, and the poor did not always share the same aims as liberal professionals or moderate constitutionalists. Their demands could include price controls, public works, labor protections, or broader democratic representation, and these aims often clashed with middle-class fears of disorder. By mapping these tensions, Clark explains why revolutionary coalitions were powerful at the start, yet prone to internal conflict once governments began to respond and hard choices emerged. Thirdly, liberal constitutionalism versus radical democracy. One of the most consequential dynamics in 1848 was the uneasy partnership between liberal reformers and more radical democratic forces. Clark tracks how early victories, such as promises of constitutions, expanded representation, and freer press, created expectations that quickly outpaced what moderate leaders were willing or able to deliver. Liberals often wanted rule of law, accountable ministries, and protection of civil liberties while keeping property rights and social order intact. Radical Democrats and many activists in the streets pressed for broader suffrage, stronger social guarantees, and an explicit break with old elites. The book shows how debates in assemblies and parliaments were inseparable from public demonstrations and the threat of renewed violence. Moderates sometimes relied on state coercion to contain popular mobilization, which in turn weakened revolutionary legitimacy among the very people who had forced initial concessions. Clark underscores that these were not merely abstract ideological disputes. They shaped decisions about policing, military loyalty, fiscal policy, and the boundaries of citizenship. The inability to sustain a stable governing alliance, especially when confronted by economic crisis and regional fragmentation, made revolutionary regimes vulnerable to counter moves by conservative forces. Fourthly, nationalism, empire, and the problem of many peoples. Clark highlights how nationalism both energized and destabilized the revolutions. In multi-ethnic empires and borderlands, demands for national self-determination collided with the reality that populations were intermingled and political boundaries were contested. movements seeking autonomy or unification often found themselves opposed by neighbors pursuing their own national projects. This created cycles of hope and fear that could rapidly escalate into conflict. The book explores how imperial centers tried to manage these pressures through concessions, repression, or attempts at federal reform, and how revolutionary leaders struggled to reconcile universal ideals of liberty with particular claims of language, culture, and historical right. Nationalism also reshaped the strategic landscape. Rulers and revolutionaries alike worried about foreign intervention, alliances, and the balance of power. Clark presents nationalism as a force that could mobilize broad participation, but also one that made compromise harder. As revolutionary governments debated constitutional frameworks, the national question repeatedly surfaced in arguments over voting rights, administrative language, military recruitment, and territorial control. By showing nationalism in practice rather than as a slogan, Clark explains why the revolutions produced both visionary projects and bitter disputes that undermined solidarity. Lastly, counter-revolution, political learning, and lasting consequences. The revolutionary years ended in many places with defeat, rollback, or authoritarian restoration, but Clark argues that 1848 should not be understood simply as failure. A major topic is how counter-revolution succeeded and what both sides learned. Conservative leaders adjusted rapidly, combining selective concessions with renewed control of armies, bureaucracies, and patronage networks. They exploited divisions among revolutionaries, appealed to fears of social chaos, and presented themselves as guardians of stability. At the same time, revolutionary movements discovered the limits of spontaneous mobilization and the importance of organization, leadership, and coherent policy. Clark traces how the experience reshaped political languages, tactics, and expectations even after the immediate uprisings were suppressed. Constitutional ideas, parliamentary procedures, and debates about citizenship and rights did not disappear. They became part of future struggles and reforms. The revolutions also altered the careers and reputations of key figures and left governments more aware of public opinion, economic vulnerability, and the power of mass politics. By treating the aftermath as a period of adaptation rather than simple reaction, the book clarifies how 1848 helped set the terms of later European political development. In conclusion, this book is best suited to readers who want a big picture yet detailed understanding of the 1848 to 1849 revolutions, including students of European history, general nonfiction readers, and anyone interested in how modern political movements rise, split, and confront state power. It benefits the reader by clarifying how ideology, economic stress, communication networks, and institutional choices interact in moments of rapid change. You come away with a sharper sense of why coalitions form, why they fracture, and how outcomes depend on contingency as much as on structural forces. Clark also helps readers connect familiar themes, constitutionalism, nationalism, social reform, and state coercion, to the practical dilemmas faced by leaders and ordinary participants. Compared with many single-country accounts, this book is worth buying because it treats 1848 as a genuinely European phenomenon, tracing cross-border influences and parallel crises without flattening local differences. Clark is known for combining narrative momentum with analytical depth, and this approach gives the reader both a gripping chronology and a framework for understanding cause and consequence. If you want one volume that explains not only what happened, but why it unfolded the way it did and why it mattered afterward, this is a strong choice. If you would like to support Christopher Clark, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.